Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
If you're rich, you want to take advantage of the opportunities afforded to you as a result of being rich. The general formula goes something like this. Buy an asset on cheap debt because you're rich, then use the acquired asset to exploit the working class. If you're rich and buy real estate, they call you a landlord. If you're rich and buy businesses, they call you an investor. If you're rich and buy media, you get to shape the narrative without anybody ever knowing. If you're rich, how do you co-opt the messaging? The general strategy is a large number of small steps that add up. So we're going to go through a couple of real world examples. The first one has to do with kind of the current outbreaks of civil unrest and with the police. And it has to do with how the police are presented in the media.
Yeah, so we started looking at the police and we started asking the question about, is there a fundamental, you know, drive beyond just the population to defund the police? And the real question, if we talk about who benefits from it, is whether or not you make profits over the militarization of the police or whether or not you don't make profits from it. And so if it comes from the context that you make money from it, then you're going to do everything you can to defund or to stop the defunding of the police. Because in the end, if you make surplus military equipment, you're going to want to sell that back down to the police department. So we can start looking at how the media portrays sort of the fight against defunding. And we talked about last time with this Eight Can't Wait campaign, which is basically very small steps that maintains the status quo in the police force. It doesn't change how they buy, doesn't change policing tactics. It only changes the perceived violence that they put out. And this is one of the ways that the ruling class, that hold down the proletariat of the worker, is because these small little changes don't actually add up to anything for the worker. But these small steps add up to basically holding the status quo, which allows the rich and the powerful to maintain where they are. So some of the examples that you'll see in the world today, especially in the newspapers, is how you portray or how you write the articles against, you know, someone dying like George Floyd. So if you read something lately that basically said George Floyd was murdered by a former police officer after the officer knelt on his throat for 8 minutes, 46 seconds, you may have been living in La La Land, because what you really read was something that said a police officer pinned George Floyd to the ground during an arrest and was transported to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. Which basically means that they've taken the narrative, which says that he was murdered, and made it procedural. So they dehumanized him, they took away the violence, and they made it appear that the police are just doing their job. And that type of messaging is what's really damaging, because it holds back your ability to have deep, complex thoughts about what's going on. And it's all about the co-opting of messaging, and it's all about how we can take a movement and we can take the grandstand that we have and we chip away at the great accomplishments it could have.
So both of those examples that were just read from an actual kind of newspaper, they're factually accurate. They present a valid circumstances of events from a certain point of view. And they are kind of through rose-tinted glasses, depending on what your motivations are. And there's nothing inherently wrong with this, because everybody has biases, but the biases are purposeful. They're driving a narrative. They're seeking to damage certain interests while raising other interests up. And so we've seen this a little bit with sort of the large media billionaires starting off and spending their money on large things that regular folk can't afford. So one of the most benign examples is Jeff Bezos, who's the major shareholder of Amazon, recently bought the Washington Post. And there seems to be this concept that, oh, he bought the Washington Post so he could tell newspaper people what to write and influence them by telling them what to write. It's much more benign and boring than that. And we're going to focus on kind of the whole Amazon issue another episode, but the short story is he bought the Washington Post because he likes what the Washington Post says, because the Washington Post substantially supports the ruling class, which he is a ruling member of. And I mean, he's just one example, but there are many more.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, so nefarious that it's the Fox News examples for the Washington Post. You know, he does keep his hands off of that one, but we can take a look at other ways that billionaires use their money and throw it around to change the narrative and make sure that their side is quote unquote viewed favorably. And that's, we just saw recently a $1 billion investment into Twitter by large Trump supporters so that they can make sure that conservative voices are heard. And you think about that for a moment, and what that really means is that all of the filtering that Twitter was trying to do, all of the fake account removal, all of the bias towards, you know, really sort of insane fascist movements are now being tamped away. Because a billionaire investor came in with their capital, they're able to control what Twitter does. You see the same sort of ring kissing or ass kissing done with Zuckerberg and Facebook, because I know it's a huge media outlet. You see the same sort of thing done to try to get commentators on Fox News or any of the big news channels. It's all to kiss the ring of the mighty to make sure that their voices are heard. And what ends up happening is that you lose, and this goes back to sort of Chomsky's, some of his theory, in which you can sort of change the debate by limiting what the rules are or what the boxes are. And you'll see this, the ruling class does this all the time, is they change the narrative to be much smaller than what it really is. So instead of asking for real structural changes, in the end, you're just getting these small little steps, these small little incremental changes that, again, allow the ruling class to hold. And we can take a look at another prime example, which is how do we influence without actually needing to buy anything? Or how do we influence by just using our popularity? And one of the largest things that's happened in this, in the context of the Democratic debate or the Democratic elections, was that we had a leftist, left-leaning candidate in Bernie Sanders, and he lost. And the ruling class did everything they can to make sure that he wasn't able to come in there and push his presidency forward and make any type of rule changes or any type of substantial change that would have affected their pocketbook. And the biggest shining star is Mike Bloomberg jumping into the race, a billionaire who spent $500 million of his quote-unquote own money, which really wasn't his own money. There's a lot of donations in there. But his job wasn't to win the nomination. It was basically to stop Bernie's nomination and allow the person they wanted to, Biden, to jump through. And because of that, we don't get anything like wealth tax. We don't get any healthcare reform. We don't get any capital gains tax reform. We get anything that we wanted to push that would have affected the rich. And again, they'd spent $500 million, and in the end, he's going to save a lot more than $500 million because he's prevented policies from being put in place.
So yeah, this is a very good investment on behalf of Mike Bloomberg. So he's a billionaire. Bernie proposed some nominal wealth tax. It didn't go far enough, but whatever. It was going to affect Mike Bloomberg. So he was like, hey, I'm going to run for president. My chief goal is going to be to ensure that I do not get taxed more as a wealthy person. And if that means I have to shell out some money, say $500 million, to stop this wealth tax from being imposed, I still come out ahead. From Mike Bloomberg's economic perspective, he has an incentive to not pay his taxes, or I shouldn't say not pay his taxes. He has an incentive to mitigate his tax liability. And he foresaw that there would be an increase in the wealth tax because it was being proposed by a candidate, Bernie Sanders, who was effectively the front runner at the time of his sort of announcement to be a candidate. So Mike went on, he got absolutely obliterated on Super Tuesday and eventually withdrew, but his intent of running was successful. And pundits want to talk about how he spent so much money and he didn't get XYZ number of delegates or this or that didn't happen. Mike Bloomberg accomplished exactly what Mike Bloomberg set out to accomplish. He ensured that Bernie did not win. He saved money versus his expected outcome had Bernie won. And from a policy perspective, and whether he even cares about policy or not, I have no idea, but Joe Biden, I presume, is effectively in line with him because he's a Republican and Joe Biden's a Republican. So I don't think Mike Bloomberg is sad that Joe Biden was the eventual nominee. And it's a prime example of no working class person thinks, hey, I should run for president because it's actually going to save me money. But maybe working class people should. And maybe a lot of people that run for office have other motivations, such as grifting, where as part of running for office, they indirectly make money. It's possible that Mike Bloomberg, he owns a large media company, Bloomberg. He also owns likely other media companies. It's possible that in paying $500 million to run his campaign, he paid his own controlling entities the money. So it really wasn't like he spent $500 million out of his own pocket. It's like he transferred his own money from one entity to another. And on paper, it's a transfer and a expenditure. And the Federal Election Commission has it on a PDF that you can go search through at some terribly designed website. So there are other entities that are kind of doing exactly what Mike Bloomberg did, but at a smaller scale. They're not billionaires, but this is happening all across the country, and it's influencing our kind of electoral system and what policy topics we can discuss. And the latest civil unrest is going to have an impact on how those messages are framed.
Yeah, I like the idea of the bringing up the grifting, because it's really important to understand that there are lots of individuals who are taking advantage anytime there's chaos or anytime there's disruption to the system. And I won't talk about one person, but she had a video come out on YouTube. I won't say the name of the person. I don't want to monetize them. So one thing you can do for us is stop monetizing the right wing. Stop looking at their videos on YouTube. You really have to stop trying to follow the Facebook links, because it brings money to them. But this person went on to say why she doesn't support George Floyd. And she works basically the hardest grift ever, which is the anti-liberal African-American, I guess to say. Again, I don't want to point too many fingers at her, but we all know who she is. Anyways, if we take a look at what she's doing, it's a grift, right? She's a dog and pony show that's allowing some people to align behind her. They throw money at her and allows the clown to make a little bit of cash on the side. This happens in think tanks. This happens all across the country. And all you're doing is you're basically taking one person's point of view, which is on the billionaire class and the millionaire class, and then perpetuating their view through experts. And you take money in and you write a white paper and you say, oh, look, I align to this view. And it's not so much that one white paper is what pushes the agenda or pushes policy. It's that multiple white papers and multiple policy positions allow individuals to reference back to experts. And that's what formulates and allows them to then argue and have positions that say, look, other people support this too. So you look at things like global warming, or you look at, you know, I guess we call it climate change now. But if it, the position papers in the 80s was that there was nothing going on, nothing wrong. And now it's slowly trying to move. But what's happening is there's been slowdown. And that's because lots and lots of funding have come from the billionaire class on the oil and gas side to write policy position at the policy position to stop individuals from believing that global warming is true. And that's because small little paper cuts like that, death by a thousand cuts, happen through organized attacks or organized sort of propaganda. And that goes to Bezos's Washington Post. It goes to the Twitter post. It goes to Facebook. It goes to all the news interviews that happen. It goes to all the AP articles that are slanted one way or the other. It goes to all these other things we've talked about.
You're not going to say the R word? The R word?
I don't want to say it. Do I have to say it?
Yeah.
Okay, it goes to like Reddit posts.
No, the other R word.
I don't know. What's the R word?
Russia.
Oh.
Come on.
We don't want to say that. Okay. So now, okay. So I don't want to talk about phantoms. Yeah, so it goes into, one, if the narrative is for your side to believe in, then you're always going to push a narrative. And two, you're looking for your own justification, your own infer justification. in which you are looking for the articles that push your point of view. And if they exist, then you can point back to your friends and post on Facebook, hey, look, look how smart I am. I don't believe in vaccines. Look how smart I am. The Earth is flat. They don't want to walk on the moon. The Earth is ran by lizard people. There's chemtrails. the water is safe to drink in some places. It's ran by lizard people. I already say that. That's a crazy one that actually 3% of the population believe. Jesus is coming in my lifetime.
We didn't land on the moon. What else is there?
We didn't land on the moon yet. Oh God, there's so many things out there that's just, it's just bonkersville. And, but again, it's the fact that these positions are written down by somebody and you can go back and reference them. And that's what these white papers do. That's what think tanks do. That's what policy advisors do. That's what all the news articles are. So you can link back to your Washington Post opinion paper of how Bezos will save the world, how Elon Musk will save the world, all those things. And it just makes an echo chamber that we have to fight against. And this whole podcast is for the worker and about trying to raise understanding of how the world around you is, the material conditions, and how we can actually fight this giant tide, like these, this giant, like, I don't know, tsunami of information coming to you. And one way we do this is to basically stop consuming it, is to look and always have sort of a one eye reading it and one eye out, because all of this is biased for a reason. There, nobody puts out news for the sake of news. Nobody puts out articles on Facebook for the sake of articles. Nobody says speeches on a political campaign because they love you. They're all lying to you to try to get somewhere.
So in discussing the think tanks, they create a manufactured narrative. But what also needs to happen is that public discourse and public events occur in a seemingly organic fashion, which allows the same entities that are pushing the narrative to go impartially, and I'm doing air quotes around impartially, go cover a, you know, breaking news story that is happening that furthers their worldview. So you might have a think tank that says, hey, global warming, it's not real. It's good that we're killing the whales because whales are, I don't know, whaley.
They poop a lot.
They drink a lot of water and water is short or something. And then you have a candidate that'll run in some, you know, random rural district of some state, and the candidate will espouse these nonsensical views that are put forth by the think tank, and you suddenly have a media organization saying, wow, Susie Q, who might legitimately be a real candidate, is, you know, wanting to kill whales because they poop and drink water or something. And suddenly you've legitimized what the think tank is saying because suddenly you have a candidate that supports it. And if you have a candidate that supports it, that must mean that, you know, a lot of people support it. And then, oh, wow, we had an election and this candidate, let's say they win. Oh, they won. That means that a majority of the people that are voting for this person also believe that whales are bad. So suddenly this think tank was like, wow, we were right. We did a lot of research. We poured a lot of good money into this. We did a lot of good science. And, you know, we were able to sway public opinion on this whole whales are bad thing. And so we were legitimized. So then we can throw out even more insane takes in the future. And if nobody ever grasps onto them, we can at least say, hey, remember that one time we were right about the whales?
Yeah, hey. And so to bring this back into the overall narrative, because the hot button issue right now that's going on is the protests and the rioting and all the heartbreak that's happening on the streets and all the pent-up anger and the fighting. As we talk about the narrative again of George Floyd and everything that's happened to really kick off a lot of debate, and it goes back to that defunding idea. So if the narrative is... this is just so you guys are aware of what's going on out there. If you see the narrative, which is things like, well, what would it really look like without police? Or would the criminals survive? Or how would the criminals respond without police? That's all, you know, manufactured consent that's coming from somebody who has skin in the game. And it's really important that right now we keep a very, very close watch on what we're consuming in order to make sure that we are not, being tricked, because in the end, there are multiple sources who are fighting to keep the status quo.
Somebody should go look up how much police officers get paid in Seattle.
Yeah, those numbers are really wild. Just saw that on Twitter.
If the numbers are accurate, and I haven't like double checked this, but this idea that teachers, there's not enough money for teachers, but then we can pay cops like six figures, like middle six figures, is just absolutely insane.
Insane, yeah, exactly. So there is people pushing for this, and it's like this for every single thing that you hold in your heart, anything that's ideologically aligned to you. So whether or not it's you're against factory farming, whether or not you're against global warming, right, or pollution, because it's not global warming and climate change is not just about one thing, it's about many things all combined together. It's whether or not it's defunding schools, whether or not it's about voting rights or whatever it happens to be, elderly care, all those things. There is vested interest against you, because if there's money to be made, they will find a way to fight against you. And this is what this podcast is about, is trying to bring awareness to all of this. And just so you know, like all of this manufactured consent, all of this discussion, it is working as designed. You're just not part of the consideration. And that's because you don't have any stake in the game and you're not part of the table, because as a worker, you don't control the capital that controls all the narrative. And one of the things that we need on the left is a singular group of individuals who have the party policy in mind, who are pushing through electoralism, who is pushing through policy, who is pushing the backs of the workers to prop them up and move them forward. And that's the one thing we're missing. And we're seeing that, or we're missing that right now as we move forward, because there's no one to fill in the power gap. And what we're seeing in the streets is individuals almost in anarchy. And that's sort of allowing the right to still exist, which is allowing the police to still exist the way they are, is because we're missing that that power on our side.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.